Hello, everyone. My name is Kayla.
And I'm Steph. And welcome to the Witch Story Podcast.
Today's story is going to be a little bit different from our regular witch trials because we're going to discuss the legend of the Bell Witch of Tennessee. And before we dive into the history behind this tale, we do want to mention that because of the lack of written records back in the day, the stories of the haunting are mostly based on oral legend. And yes, I did say haunting. Many movies, books, folk tales have been spun from the story of the Bell Witch. However, the families that have been affected did exist and still do today. And with that, we would like to tell their tales along with factual evidence before we come up with any conclusions as to what may have really occurred. One reason that I really wanted to tell this story is because it is the first case in American history where a paranormal haunting or entity actually received the blame for the death of a human.
That's so interesting.
I know, right?
How crazy is that though? Like, imagine on like a death certificate, like it just says cause of death, ghost. Ghost attack.
Yeah, and that's another thing. Like, was this a ghost? Was this a witch? Like, what the heck happened? So
yeah,
we won't know the truth as to what happened, but there are numerous theories that we will talk about at the end that could explain the haunting if it wasn't really a haunting. And another reason why we really wanted to talk about this case is because when people think about witches in America, they immediately think of Salem. But there was in fact quite a few other stories and trials that did come out of America.
So much more.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one. So let's begin. Let's talk about the Bell family. So our story begins back in year 1804, where 11 families decided to take the journey from North Carolina to Tennessee in search of a new place to call home. One of these families was the Bell family, who purchased over 300 acres of land in an area called Red River. Now, in the modern day, it's the town's called Adams, Tennessee. And I just want to say that when looking at a map, yes, Tennessee and North Carolina are bordering states. They're right beside each other. North Carolina's to the east, and we have Tennessee to the west. But the town in Tennessee that they moved to was all the way on the far, far west. So even though it doesn't seem like a far distance, but
it is
other side.
Yeah, especially if you're traveling by like horse and wagon and by foot, you know, like that's going to take a really, really long time, but definitely worth it for all the land that was purchased for sure.
Yeah, 300 acres, that's a lot.
That's a lot. And I do know that like at that time, they had fought the indigenous peoples, unfortunately, and treaties were made. So people were able to purchase public land at a very cheap price. So there was this like boom of migrations from different states to there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I think for us, it's like, why would you move that far?
Yeah.
It totally made sense back then to have your own like farming land.
Exactly. You want to claim your own land and like name things and whatever. That's what everyone wanted because that was the American dream.
Mm-hmm. The unfortunate history of colonization, not only in America. I'm just going to talk now a little bit about the Bell family and just give a little insight as to who they were, the characters of our story, pretty much. So the Bell family consisted of the father, John Bell, born in 1750, and their mother, Lucy Williams Bell, born in 1770. Together, they married in 1782 when Lucy was 12 and John was 32.
That's crazy. You know, like even in the Middle Ages, that wasn't an average age to get married or to have like that large of an age gap too. Mm-hmm. And people always think that, but it wasn't. The fact that this is in 1782, that's crazy.
Yeah, usually it was like somebody was 14 and their husband was like 21 maybe.
Yeah, well, like the average age in the Middle Ages for women actually was closer to like 20 something. And mm-hmm. a lot of people don't think that, but that's the truth. So
despite their disturbing age gap, The two did have 9 children together, and in order of birth, I'm just going to read their names out loud now. They were Benjamin, Jesse, John Jr., Drury, Esther, Zadok, Elizabeth, Richard, and Joel. The Bell family altogether were pretty well liked and respected in the community that they moved to, and they began a successful farm on their huge plot of land. Another family that made the move to Red River was the Batts family, B-A-T-T-S. The Batts family included the father, who we believe to be Frederick Batts, and the mother, Kate Williams Batts. Kate spelled with a C, even though when you, if you Google this online, you're probably going to find it with a K. But in the actual records, when you look it up, it is Kate with a C.
It was spelled like just Kate, like not Catherine or anything?
Nope.
That's weird. That's interesting because that's like the first time I've seen it like that.
Mm-hmm. It said Kate might have been short for Katie, which... I don't know. They couldn't read or write back then. So maybe Katie was spelled C-A-T-E to them. So maybe her name was Katie.
Okay.
And Kate was also Lucy Bell's niece. They were probably around the same age as well, but they were family from North Carolina. So Frederick and Kate, the Batts, together started a farm on their land as well. But unfortunately, Frederick would have suffered an accident that then led him to be disabled, and he could no longer work the farm. I'm unclear as to what this accident actually was, but if you're unable to work a farm and that's your main source of income and how you gain food and everything, I'm guessing it was probably pretty serious. Like, he was probably bedridden, like, the grandpa from Willy Wonka.
He certainly got up for that ticket, didn't he?
That's true. Yeah, Frederick did not get back up. So Kate, being the tough, independent, hardworking woman that she was, she took the role as head of the family, but without Frederick, she couldn't make ends meet. I mean, she probably would have done all the household chores while Frederick tended the farm, and now she had to do both. And the Batts, like the Bells, had many kids, and so she couldn't keep up with like having to do laundry, feed them, do all those maternal things, and then also do all of the farming that Frederick must have done earlier. It was recorded that Kate had 13 children, but many of these children did die young or in infancy. The Batts then became desperate and sold some of their land at a cheap price to the Bells. And they knew full well that they were being taken advantage of, but they had to give up the land or whatever for cheap just so that they can have some money. And the Bells also knew full well and continued to take advantage of the Batts family. And this is where things go sour for the two of them. The Bells bought a young slave girl, because slavery was still a thing back then. They bought a slave girl from Frederick Batts' brother, Benjamin. But then they decided to return the girl until she was old enough to work because they deemed her still too young to do her duties. Does that make sense?
What? So, it makes sense. It's just,
yeah, they purchased the girl and they're like,
it just bothers me.
Yeah, they purchased the girl and they were like, oh, she's too young. We're going to give her back so her mom or whoever can raise her, feed her until she's older and can work. And then when the slave girl, unfortunately, I'm so sorry, like she doesn't have a name in this story. When she grew up and was ready to be resold for work, there was a dispute on the price. So I'm thinking like... they were like, no, like I'm going to pay the initial price that I bargained for. But the Batts family was just like, well, we just raised her and housed her and fed her this whole time. Like you should pay more, right?
Yeah.
And because of this, Benjamin Batts decided to take John Bell to the local judge and file a lawsuit against him for extortion. And Benjamin did win this lawsuit. but only because he didn't tell John Bell that he was suing him, and John Bell failed to be present for the court date, so he lost the trial.
Yeah, that'll definitely get you. And just that whole like situation, though, it bothers me to my core.
We don't
know name. Yeah, and like what happened a lot back then, even until, to be honest, this happened in like Ontario, where Indigenous children were often like kept and were sold as slaves. You wouldn't find out what they looked like or what their size was or their age until they got there, because people would just make inquiries, because a lot of the time, especially of recent years, like let's say early 1900s, it was very much under the table, I guess. And so I feel like back then that probably happened a lot, where people would just send inquiries and tell them what they want, and then the person they would receive would just not be up to the standards as to what they were told. So I understand how there definitely could have been a dispute, but it bothers me that there's a dispute about the purchase of a person.
Yeah, I hate it. I hate all of it. I just wish I could apologize on behalf of all the people who have suffered and who are still suffering. I mean, there's so many slaves still today. It just blows my mind how you can dehumanize somebody like that. But in this situation, in this small town, and not to discredit anything that you were saying at all, but I do think that they must have at least have seen the girl prior, the slave prior, because it's such a small community. Only 10 families were brought, and I'm guessing less than that in slaves. Perhaps maybe they just expected this child to do more than they were capable of. I mean, not all children grow up the same way and can do things in the same way, in a sense.
It's crazy to think about.
But now this gives us an array of reasons for the Bell family to be disliked. And coincidentally, this is when the spookies, the paranormal activity, begins. The first abnormal occurrence that took place was one day in broad daylight, John Bell went out hunting on his own land, and he witnessed the sighting of a very peculiar creature. The creature was said to have resembled, in his description, a cross between a dog and a rabbit with black fur all over it. And that honestly reminds me of my dog, a Boston Terrier. But the creature seemed very unnatural and terrified John, obviously. So he did what any American would do. He took his gun, fired at the creature, but it immediately disappeared. And John could not believe his eyes. You know, one minute it was there and the next it was gone. And I'm here trying to be logical and thinking, what animal could this have actually been?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a black bear, or like those, like a boar. That looks like a dog rabbit if you squint. And if it's a baby boar.
Or it could have just been a really large hare. Like, I don't know. I feel like looking up the wildlife that is in that area, to be honest.
Yeah, I was looking it up. And then I'll tell you later why, but I was also looking up like the folklore with, is it the Wendigos?
Oh, the skinwalkers?
Mm-hmm, like those types of beings.
But yeah. Yes. Oh, so man, after those stories scare me. They scare me to bits.
Oh my gosh, I know. We should do episodes on those too. Just branch out.
Yeah, they are pretty interesting.
After the sighting of this creature, the entire Bell family began witnessing other unexplainable activities taking place in their home. They constantly heard thuds and noises in the middle of the night that kept them frustratingly awake. And they also heard what sounded like chains dragging and stones being thrown at the exterior of the house. But upon examination, nothing was found that could have possibly made that sound. So one night, the strange sounds manifested into something physical, and it began to torment young Betsy Bell, who was 14 at the time. She awoke one morning screaming with red welts all over her face and her hair tied to the bedposts. This torture to Betsy continued and then began to also torment the Bell sons, who had the same marks appear on their bodies. Betsy also said that she saw a ghostly apparition one day outside in the afternoon of a form of a girl in a green dress just hanging from a tree limb. She was not the only one to see these apparitions. Other members of the family, including the slaves, began to see them too. They decided that they would ask others for help in the community. They postponed this as much as possible because who's going to believe you if you say, oh, can you please come to our house in the middle of the night? There's some paranormal activity. You know, this was in the 1700s. Nobody wanted to admit that they had any demonic possessions happening in their house. But finally, one day they decided enough was enough. So they invited their neighbors, Mr. and Mrs. Johnson, to stay a few nights and witness the unexplainable activities. I don't know if Mr. and Mr. Johnson lasted longer than one night in this haunted house, but when they stayed over, they agreed that there was no logical sense to the noises happening. They must have looked outside and saw, like, was it a tree branch? Was it like a kid pranking them? But just nothing made sense. And they decided that it was time to investigate with help from the rest of the townspeople. Many people tried to help, but when nothing could be done, they were simply just told to pray. And that's when matters only got worse. Three of the Bell sons actually ended up fighting in the war under General Andrew Jackson. And they told the rest of the troops, including Andrew, about stories of these apparitions that would haunt the Bell house. And this tale of a haunting intrigued Andrew Jackson, who decided to stay at the Bell house with some of the other troops. And now this was, they were probably passing through. They weren't going out of their way to just be like, hey, we're going to take a break from the war and stay at the Bell's house. They were going through the area and they needed a place to stay. And the Bells offered up their farmhouse. The men were so eager that supposedly they even brought these silver bullets, perhaps hoping to end the terror of the Bell house. And after only one night stay at the house, the troops went back to Nashville because they couldn't take the paranormal activity going on. They were too frightened. And Andrew Jackson is quoted saying, "I had rather face the entire British army than spend another night with the Bell witch." This is where the witch of our story comes in. By now, the family and the townspeople and the troops deem the horrors of the Bell house to be the doings of a witch. And not just any witch, they believed it to be an entity conjured up by Kate Batts. Some people say that it was the ghost of Kate Batts herself, but when looking up at the census in 1933, she was still alive. So was this a demon, the ghost of Kate, perhaps astral projecting or something that she conjured up?
Sorry, by 1933, you mean 18, right?
Yep. That's okay. What I mean.
I was like, wait, what? How old is she?
Definitely a witch. So she was known now in the town to be like loud, angry, and obviously an independent woman. And people were not used to a woman being the head of the household. And so with all this and the previous arguments with the Bell family, this was reason and motive to attack the Bells. When John Bell's health began to diminish, followed by his death 3 years later in 1820, it was the witch of Kate Batts that was to blame. John Bell Jr., John Bell's son, said he even found a vial of what smelt like poison by his father's bedside table, and this vial was thought to have been given to him by the witch, Kate Batts. At first, the mom, Lucy, was to blame for the death, but then the disembodied voice of Kate took the credit. So, like, they were all in the room being like, who killed our dad? There's this vial of poison. Mom, was it you? And then all of a sudden you just hear like, no, it was me. At John Bell's funeral in the memorial service, apparently the apparition of Kate was also seen by everybody to make an appearance there. But when you look back at the records, John Bell was 70 years old. Like, that's when people died back then. So I don't think there was anything
70 years old, yeah,
about his death, you know?
No, could have just been like natural occurrences, like, or old natural age. Yeah.
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 That's a good time to live to back then, right? 70?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
John Bell's death was the main event of this paranormal haunting. He was the one that the paranormal occurrence, the haunting, was written in his records to be his cause of death. But what happened to the rest of the family? So young Betsy Bell, the girl that all of those weird occurrences where her hair was tied to her bedpost, she was supposed to have married a man by the name of Joshua Gardner. But once again, the apparition of the girl in the green dress appeared to her before her wedding in March 1821 and warned Betsy not to marry him. And she was so scared that out of fear, she broke off the wedding and ended up marrying her former school teacher later instead. Mr. Gardner had it easy after this. He ended up moving and became a county sheriff, and he started a railroad with his brother in Weakley County. And he died a wealthy man at the age of 84. As for Betsy's brother, the one who found the poison, John Bell Jr., he was told by an apparition of the witch that she would reappear to him in 7 years' time. And when she did, in fact, reappear in 1827, she spent 3 nights talking to John about the past, present, and future, like that Scrooge Christmas Carol.
Well, when you said that, 7 years?
Yeah.
It just reminded me of The Ring, like, you're gonna die in 7 days.
Ew, I hate that movie.
So do I.
That's like the one movie
for so long. And when you said that, it, like, I will return in 7 years' time. Like, oh no.
I have to tell you a quick story about that movie. I don't know. I think it was like my first horror movie that I really watched. And I watched it on
It was mine too.
Oh, really?
I watched it on a
sleepover. And I don't even think I wanted to go on the sleepover, but my friend was just like, oh, like, come over. I'm like, okay, fine. And then, yeah, her parents weren't home. We watched a horror movie for the first time. She had a creepy old house and I was so scared. And then the 7 day thing happened and, like, I had to sleep in my dad's bed for 7 days because I was so scared every time the phone, like the home phone when you still had those. I was so scared every time it rang that I was going to die.
I do not blame you, Leah. No, I feel like I was in a similar situation, actually. Like, so I was 8 years old when I watched that, I think, for the first time. And this was when I lived in Thornhill, I guess. And so I guess I didn't have any plans that weekend or something, or I had nowhere to go. I probably didn't have a lot of friends, but my mom said, like, just go hang out with your sister or whatever. And so I had to go with my sister to hang out with her friends. And then my sister was trying to, like, be cool and whatever. And her friends were like, let's watch a horror movie. Then they just put it on and kind of made me watch it. And from that point on, like, I'm still scared of it. Like, if I see a scene, probably won't sleep for a while.
No, I was traumatized.
And then, yeah. And she used to, and then she prank called the house sometimes.
Oh my God. So, like,
yeah. Traumatizing experience.
And, like, I don't know, like, I feel like that set the bar so high, because when I watched horror movies after that, I was like, oh, that's it.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't as scared as I was. Oh, well, I don't know. Something about that movie messed me up.
I just can't do it. I can't watch it when, like, people are contorted in really weird positions. It's whenever a person is, like, portrayed as animalistic, my brain just, like, immediately rejects it. And, like, I go into fight or flight mode or something. It's like, I can't take zombies at all. ever. Oh. Like I can take the slow ones. The slow ones are fine. It's the fast one. If something's contorted in a weird way or like starts snarling, but they're a human, like I will run as fast as I can or cry.
So, you know, in yoga, how you do bridge pose?
Oh, like no.
when they start running down the stairs in that position.
Like, see, if someone like did that to me as like a prank, I'd probably end up really hurting them when I don't want to. Either that or I'll just like run away and scream and cry and people will actually like call 911, even though there's nothing wrong.
Oh God, this is why I don't want a child, because if it starts doing like little gymnastics tricks, I'll be like, get away from me.
My dad, just, like, he told me a story not too long ago. Apparently when I was a kid and I'd have a nightmare, I used to go to my parents' room, but like, I wouldn't wake them up. I'd just stand there at the edge of their bed.
Ew. Yeah. I'm scared of you in the middle of the night.
Child. He's like, you were the creepiest child when you had nightmares.
Did you have dark hair when you were a kid, or was your hair lighter?
My hair was blonde when I was a kid. Yeah.
Okay. Well, whatever. You're still creepy.
Thanks. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Back to the 7 years thing. Which Christmas carol is the past, present, future?
Yeah, it is. It's a Christmas carol. Yeah, Ghost of the Present.
Oh, that's what the story is called, Christmas Carol?
Yeah, A Christmas Carol is the name of the story.
Oh, I see. For the future, the apparition said she would reappear to John's descendants in 107 years' time. However, as of 1935, which would have been 107 years later, there had been no stories or records of her return.
Damn it.
I know. Actually, well, there are some spookies that will come up, but I'll quickly finish with the rest of the family. The other children would either marry or find work. Some, unfortunately, did die. Well, they're all dead now, but they would move to other states, and a few remained in the area as well. There are many descendants of the Bell and Batts family to this day that people are tracing back in their family tree. The mother, Lucy Bell, was the only one who did not have a bad experience with the witch or the apparition. In fact, Lucy ended up suffering an illness in her lungs, and she said the apparition of Kate Batts, not the actual person Kate Batts, appeared to her and came to her in her aid. Lucy said she was certain that she was going to die, but this ghostly apparition would sing to her, read to her, bring her food. And in the end, Lucy ended up making a full recovery, which she credits to this witch, and she lived till 1835. Many people hypothesize that this could possibly be because of that familial connection that Kate and Lucy were related prior, but we're never going to know what the actual truth was.
Yeah.
And now we have to think, if not Kate Batts summoning evil upon the Bell family, what could have actually happened in this house? Some sources say that John Bell simply had a bad case of strep throat and some muscular disorders for which he was taking medicine for. And when you mix this medicine with some bad moonshine, it could have been that was the poison that killed him.
Mm-hmm.
But today, you can still visit the site of the Bell family farm as a tourist attraction. As I mentioned earlier, there are still some descendants alive today from both lines of the Bells and Batts family. And these descendants, as well as tourists, both say that unexplainable occurrences still can be found to take place on the land. The cabin itself, where the Bells lived, was torn down in the mid-1800s, but they did replace it with a replica with actual items from the original home. So it's kind of like a museum now.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that, like, I don't know, for me being like a little bit scared of the paranormal, like, you don't keep those items. Like, they just...
No.
Bad juju, bad vibes.
Yeah, it's like the same thing. Like... there was a trend a couple of years ago. I think it's still a trend, but people are buying haunted dolls.
Mm-hmm.
Why
would you do that?
Why?
Yeah. Okay. For further spookies, and this is why I brought up the Wendigo earlier. I understand that the Wendigo is an Algonquin folklore creature, and it's most likely completely not what John Bell saw, because John Bell saw like a small rabbit dog looking type thing. But on the property that they owned is a cave, and now it's known as the Bell Witch Cave, and it's also a historical landmark. But this cave was a 490-foot-long cave that had the burial site of an indigenous person hundreds of years prior, but has since been looted. So the cave itself is also said to have unexplained phenomena, because I think because, like, you know, it was a grave site and they were robbed from their grave.
Mm-hmm.
And many people have also said that Kate Batts was seen inside this cave, and you can hear strange noises when walking through it. And it's also very superstitious to take anything from inside the cave. And there's this one story that this person took something from the cave, like, I don't know, like a rock or something, and like just everything in his life started to go downhill. Like, his wife left him, he lost his job, etc. So people just like suffer terrible fates from if you take anything from the cave. So perhaps there's like a curse that had to do with this cave. Yeah. And there was also
more immoral.
Yeah. And it was like the grounds that the Bell family was on. So like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Another theory was that perhaps it was the ghost of a slave that John Bell had killed coming to avenge. But there's no evidence of this either. The last theory that seems to be the most popular one besides an actual haunting to explain all of this was that it was perhaps the husband of Betsy Bell that fabricated all of this, because he was a school teacher. He was educated. People would have just believed him because he was educated and maybe just a really good storyteller. And it was suggested that he didn't want Betsy to marry Joshua Gardner, so he made this whole story up so that Betsy would leave this person and say that it was because of a ghost that she left him. But that's a little stretched out as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, regardless, it is now a huge tourist hotspot. They do like haunted hayrides, like witchy themed events. Like I said, it's like a museum. You can go canoeing and hiking on the grounds. And this story is so well known that it's actually like taught in local schools.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I was never taught any community history or community stories. Like maybe a bit about history, but nothing that was like very local. Like it would always be like nationwide history that had to be known. It was never mm-hmm. like community based. So to hear that people are being taught those things is very interesting to me. Like, and I think it's actually really cool and kind of good to be taught more about your community. But
yeah,
also I don't know how good it is if children are being taught about the paranormal ongoings and hauntings.
Perhaps it wasn't the history of the hauntings, but more the settlers of the region and when what's his name came through. Dude.
Columbus. Which dude?
Andrew Jackson.
Who are you? Andrew Jackson. Sorry. I'm like, he came over. Like, which dude? There's many dudes.
He came to the house.
Okay.
But yeah, I think it's taught in like that sense. And I guess it's like more of a small town.
Yeah.
Like we wouldn't have been taught things because there aren't any small local legends. Maybe like Wayne Gretzky, but
I love how that's our local. He's not even local. That's funny.
But yeah, yeah. That's the Bell Witch.
Yeah. I wish we had a haunted house that was around here. I'm pretty like, we probably do. We just don't know the story about it.
I went on a haunted ghost walking tour of Toronto.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I know.
They do those.
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah. And I think I remember as a kid actually going to Casa Loma, and they did do like, you know, those Halloweeny tours, but then I think they also did have haunted experiences or something like that. I don't know. That was cool. But for me, I'm thinking like, because, well, I guess I can't really say where I live on this podcast, but I live close to an older town that was like created in the later 1700s. So there's a lot of older houses and buildings there that are beautiful, but have amazing potential to be haunted. there's a history to all of them there. And I think it'd be really cool if a story emerged from that. But I also really haven't paid too close attention to like any of the town's history or archives. So
I wonder if there is a local historian for you, for your area.
There is a museum. And I could always ask them, but I always feel weird about being that person just saying, hey, can I look in your archives?
So you're writing a book about it and nobody asks any questions.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess I could do that.
An English accent that helps.
Yeah. And say, I have this doctorate and I did this and I did that. And these credentials and let me in.
Yeah, they'll just give you the key and be like, lock up when you're done.
Yeah.
Ooh, also, as we're finishing up, I'm just going to mention something about the sources we've used. Be very careful when you're looking at sources for the Bell Witch, because they are not very reliable. For example, there's a contemporary account written by Martin V. Ingram in 1894 called The Authenticated History of the Bell Witch, but it has been criticized by many historians as not being accurate. But you know, if an old book says authentic on the cover, you're going to want to believe it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they're going to take it word for word then. Oh, it's old. It must be true.
Yeah, so just take everything with a grain of salt, unless you're looking at actual archival vial records or marriage records. And with that, we would like to end our episode today with a big thanks to everyone once again for listening. Please don't forget to rate and subscribe to our podcast. If you would like to send us a message, feel free to email us at witchstorypodcast@gmail.com and follow us on social media. We're on Instagram and Twitter at witchstorypod. We hope you tune back in again next week for another episode as well. Bye, everyone.